At the turn of the 20th century, innovations in photographic technology and an American culture of optimism and self-celebration helped create panoramic group photography. Organizations famed and obscure commissioned images that sometimes encompassed a full 360 degrees. No public event, be it circus, train wreck, or Army-Navy football game, was too grand or too humble to deserve its own wide-angle commemoration. In nearly 100 beautifully reproduced duotone photographs, most published for the first time, the new book, The Big Picture, brings this shared experience of American history to life. Collector Josh Sapin's commentary describes the people and stories behind these images, while celebrated public figures from a variety of fields provide personal reflections that connect these Americans of another era to our own lives today. Josh is the CEO of AMC Networks, which operates AMC, WeTV, IFC, and Sundance Channel, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
A delight. What brought you to this particular idea, this panoramic, to even collect these panoramic photographs?
It had sort of accidental beginnings. I would wander through junk and antique stores, and my eye was captured by, I would assume people listening have seen these photographs. They're often of sports teams, university groups, et cetera. They're very, of course, long, and they're black and white, and they just have a great sort of visual impression that begins with their unique structure, and I think goes on from there.
What is it about this technology of the time that immediately brought us to not landscape, but to people, to gatherings?
Right. Well, I think people have always obviously gotten together and wanted to recognize and commemorate their time and their moment together, usually for what the moment meant or what the organization represented. And the panoramic photograph was sort of a bit of an extravaganza at the time. And so it was a way of doing something visually dramatic to commemorate what was going on.
When you decided to put these together, what was your idea? What did you want to commemorate?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. You know, I had been collecting, as I've mentioned, sort of randomly and sort of anecdotally for over 30 years. And at the time, I had high school kids in the house. In part, I was watching them learn history in school, and while they appreciated a lot of it, a lot of it felt slightly force-fed. And I had a bit of a notion that if one looked at these photographs, they were so idiosyncratic, and they tell an interesting little story of a chunk of the history of America, if you flip through the pages, as a way of seeing what was going on in the United States, you know, sort of very broadly from the middle of the 19th century through the middle of the 20th century. I thought it'd be an interesting portrait of history.
In that portrait of history, we see all kinds of groups. They're all mostly large groups, but some very well known and some rather ragtag, for want of a better term.
Oh yeah, there's the so-called curation of it, or the selection of the photographs was the most fun, and we thought about doing a number of different things in the book, which is, by the way, sized so it looks a little bit like sympathetic to panoramic photographs.
Right.
It's very, yeah. That's its structure. But we sort of thought about doing it roughly from east to west, and we thought about doing it, and we ended up doing chapters that include sort of building America, work, spectacle, and community, ended up with a selection of some photographs that are formal and very intended and represent big marks of time and history, and some that are just these assemblages of odd and idiosyncratic groups of people. And I hope that in aggregate they make for an interesting and fun read.
Does it interest you that we seem to be coming? I mean, Panorama has never really gone away, but now through the iPhone and other applications, most of us have access to it quite readily.
Yeah, I think it's actually there's a little bit of a moment of return to it because the current smartphones allow you to actually take panoramic photographs. So the very specific format is now readily accessible. But I think it's less specifically, at least to my taste or to my mind, the panoramic and slightly more the fact that it was a bit of a spectacular thing at the time that marks its place in history and makes the photographs particularly notable. I don't know if Instagram or Snapchat will have their moment. I did recently see a really pretty wonderful book in a bookstore. It was in Barnes & Noble, of photographs from the world of Instagram. And I did spend this weekend fussing around with Snapchat, which is a new way to take, obviously, photographs that you can send to someone you know, and you can actually draw on them through the digital device, and then they're extinguished in anywhere between, I think it's 1 and 10 seconds, depending upon your setting. And so it is the thing of the moment, and it's an intriguing thing of the moment. And I think that these panoramic photographs in their time were very, very much the intriguing thing of the moment.
And if you go back to these photos of whether it be 1919 or 1903 or 1942, it doesn't matter. If you take a picture of a large group of people, not everybody is going to smile.
No, actually, I'm sorry to say, very few will smile. And they actually have, this is not going to encourage anyone to rush out and buy the book, they have a slightly maudlin look to them in aggregate, I have to admit.
Well, they look like they've been, you know, they're sort of up against the, you know, the firing line.
I pity my wife, who had to live with these things being hung all over the photograph. All over the house for a long time, because they have a sort of mausoleum-like look when you hang 30 of them on a wall without too much context.
Yeah.
But I think when you put them in the book, the what they say about history if I can use a fancy word, in an almost archaeological way is pretty intriguing. Yeah, but they have a sort of black and white, slightly cruel aggregate face to them.
And you do in the book what many of us can do on our computers and on our smartphones, which is focus in on one portion of the image and take a closer look, which is often very interesting because it puts it into a context and gives you more of an idea of what is going on as a whole.
Yeah, you know, that's that for me is the fun of it. I don't know if there's any photo fans listening, but you know, I feel like there's sort of two different perspectives that one can look at a panoramic photograph from. One is from far away, you sort of see the history, the subject, the date, and what it meant in the world, whether it is a group advocating prohibition or an early meeting of the NAACP. And then if you look at very close range, you see people, of course, and individual people, and you see their facial expressions. And they become, and the photograph becomes very meaningful on an entirely different, much more intimate and personal level. And I think there it is a whole different experience.
When I guess it's interesting to think of when I think of you and your career, and I mean you're one of the great pioneers of cable television, as I mentioned, CEO of AMC, and you look at what you have accomplished and what the network has accomplished over the past year with Breaking Bad and Mad Men and Walking Dead. I mean, you have to be going into 2014 pretty pleased at how things are going.
Yeah, you know, I've had the good fortune of working with immensely talented people in our company and those who are making shows for us at AMC and Sundance and WeTV and IFC and movies for IFC Films and Sundance. And yeah, it's there's nothing more, it's very pleasing to be able to sort of have a hand in maybe the right word is emancipating the great creative juice of people like Matt Weiner and Vince Gilligan and the people who are making all of our TV shows and movies. Yeah, it's a fun time.
So when we have this conversation, as TV geeks do, which is that we are in this golden age, do you feel, what do you feel the ingredients are that you have personally been responsible for in allowing those creative juices to come to television? Because obviously there were always a lot of creative people out there, but what have you allowed them to do to bring us such a high quality?
Well, I think I'm not so sure what I have done. I think that the consequence of technology has done a lot. And I think it's really there is much talk about the golden age or second golden age of television and the creative people involved in it and their freedom to do what they do, and that is true. There's no question that it would not be done were it not for the people who write, cast, direct, and act in the shows. I think what's been behind the entire movement, if you want to call it, and you see it on our channel, and you see it on HBO and Showtime and Stars and FX and Netflix, is that the manner of TV consumption has changed a bit,
right.
And it has allowed people to watch to say a trite thing when they want to. And as a consequence of watching when they want to and not only being slave to a linear schedule of Sunday night at 10, even though, of course, that's still very important, it has allowed people to pay more attention if they can say, gee, I want to watch it midnight. Now I have the time. Now my kids are asleep. Now I really want to watch carefully. And I think that's actually given rise to, among other things, I think that has given rise to a change in the manner of TV shows that have been presented, and they are more nuanced, they are more creative, they are more deliberate, and they are slower in their articulation. And that has actually, the technology has been deep behind, but nonetheless really behind the change in a lot of what we're seeing on television.
You know, I think your stamp here is to understand that and to realize that, because what we have, you do not see binge television watching as a dirty word or a bad thing.
No, just the opposite.
I think
it's interesting. Binge, of course, refers to doing one after another, which is all good. But what's embedded in that, I think that's sort of interesting to reflect on, is that when you're binging on 10 or 5 or 1, you're doing it when you're ready to pay a tremendous amount of attention. And so if you think of what one's mindset is like when you go to a darkened movie theater and buy a ticket, you're doing nothing other than paying attention to the movie. You're sitting in a darkened room and you're paying attention to the movie. You're not in your kitchen making dinner, and you're not going to the bathroom, and you're not doing something else. So you're really paying attention. And oftentimes when you're in, call it binge mode, you're really paying attention. And so therefore, if you're really paying attention, you really are open to, I think, appreciate a different sort of craft that's probably historically been much more in the movies, or you could call it in cinema or an independent film, that it's been on the television screen, and now it's coming to the television screen because people are paying attention.
One of the things that struck me is, and all of these shows, Breaking Bad and Mad Men and Walking Dead, I'm a huge fan of, and I you had a marathon over the holiday of Breaking Bad, and you know, you can catch the third episode of the second season or the ninth episode of the fourth season and take it completely out of context. And yes, I've seen them before, and watch them and appreciate them and see them as their own individual little jewel, which I think speaks so much to the craft and to this type of television that we're now seeing.
You know, it's really true. It really, that is just a credit to specifically to Vince Gilligan, who created the show,
yeah.
and to all the people who work on the show. They made something that is remarkable. And you know, and I have the same experience as a fan, not just as well as someone who works in it, which is each one just holds up, as you said, as a jewel. And it there's remarkable, talk about sort of cinematography and the look, that show looks, as does Mad Men, as does The Walking Dead, as does a show we have on Sundance called Rectify and a new show we have called The Red Road. They look entirely distinctive, and they feel distinctive, and you're captured and carried away by them.
What do you think this will ultimately mean? I mean, we started talking to you about Panorama and this technology that was available and how people used it. So now we have this new technology. So how do you think people are going to use it, and what impact will it have on, we could ask, what impact did Panorama have on photography overall? Right. What impact does this have on television overall?
You know, I think with the impact that we're seeing today is I think it's in sort of full flower. I think that a show on HBO like Girls, or a show on Showtime like Homeland, or a show on FX like The Americans wouldn't/couldn't. And I'll add to that House of Cards and Orange is the New Black on
right.
Netflix. That you know, they said really simply, they're a lot more like movies. There are cinematic qualities, not just in how they look, but in every way that they are. And that is, I think, the impact that we're seeing today. It is likely to continue for as long as the technology and the sort of the financial so-called ecosystem underneath it remains constant.
So let me ask you a little bit about that financial ecosystem. When you look at something like Mad Men, which is ending this year, or Breaking Bad.
Well, actually, two more seasons.
You have a split season, right? One final season is going to be split in two, much like Breaking Bad did. So Breaking Bad ended in calendar year 2013. So in the fiscal conditions, I mean, for you as a CEO, does that just stab you in the heart that this is going to go away? Or are you confident that something is going to come along and we'll replace it in some way in the schedule and for us as an audience?
Oh, you know, I will look backward and cherish. I do. It's time. Breaking Bad is over, and so it's wonderful to look back, and it's wonderful to have you say, "Gee, the marathon was terrific." And it's terrific to have it referred to. And happily, we're right now at work on something with Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould and the group who brought us Breaking Bad, that is based on the Saul character, if
right.
you're familiar with him, and it's called
Better Call Saul. Right.
And so I'm sort of, of course, hopeful that show will be interesting and captivating. And what we'll do is we will... We'll just do what we think is new and fresh and interesting and provocative. And we'll do, that's what brought us to this party. And I think there's no sort of turning back, and it doesn't much help to spend time in the rearview mirror. And what is most, I think the smartest thing to do is just to go with the material that we think is the most interesting and freshest and dramatic and dynamic. And so that sort of it remains exhilarating.
So when someone like the creator of Breaking Bad comes to you, Vince Gilligan, and says, okay, we think it's time for this show to end, and you can throw money at that problem and try to eke out another season or two, but you ultimately trust the art form, right? You ultimately trust what works for the story and the show.
Oh, yeah. We must trust that. And we must trust the people who are creating it.
Now, isn't that rare in television?
Well, yeah, of course. There are commercial forces, and we're fully in and at the effect of those commercial forces that want anything that is succeeding to go on for as long as possible. But the nature of it is that TV shows don't last forever. They have their they come to an end, and we have attempted to be respectful of when things come to a, if there's such a thing as a natural creative end, that's largely determined by the creative people behind them, but to really respect and to treat that very well. And I think with Breaking Bad, I think it's fair to say that I think it ended beautifully, and I think that it ended extremely well, and I think it didn't overstay its welcome.
Right.
And I think that there's something good in that, both sentimentally, I'll stop short of saying spiritually, and I think ultimately economically, doing it right.
Well, you know, I understand stopping short of spiritually, but I understand the impulse, because it does seem like there is a very organic feeling, especially with that show of okay, this was the arc, and very few shows, I think, can come out of a season and end in a way that most people are pretty darn happy with.
Yeah, well, by the way, really, that's all to the credit of the people who work here very directly with it, and all to the credit of Vince Gilligan, who and all the people on the show who figured that out,
yeah,
and wrote it and constructed it and did it. It's just all to their credit to have made it end so by so many people's agreement so well.
Well, the name of your book is The Big Picture, America in Panorama. It is a gorgeous volume. It is published by the Princeton Architectural Press, and it is much like a panorama picture bound, and it is a simply gorgeous production. Josh Sapin, I thank you so much for your great work and for being with us this morning. It's an honor to speak to you. I thank you
very much. Oh, please. Thanks so much for having me. It's been my privilege.
Thank you. Okay. Josh Sapin's new book is The Big Picture. It's published by Princeton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.